Welcome to David Clark's We Are Superman podcast, episode number 294. I am your host, Bill Stahl. Hey, just want to give you a quick update or two on a couple of recent podcast guests we had. Last week, Diarra Cropper was on, a black ultramarathoner. He ran the Behind the Rocks race out in Moab and had a great race. Very tough race out there. They end up doing a lot of bouldering, and it's a 50K race. And I finished in 36th place, I believe it was, somewhere over 5.5 hours. So kudos to Diarra for that. First of many big races he's got coming up this year. And I also want to give a shout out to CJ, Chris Johnson, another one of the Black Men Run group who did the race. I know he's been going through a really bad bout of post-tibial syndrome, and it really hit him hard, and yet he hung in there and finished that race as well. So congrats as well to CJ. And also want to mention Keenan Haga, who was on a couple weeks before, and he's the guy who is trying to do 100 marathons in 2024 on top of the 311 he's already run in his lifetime. And in March, he has been embarking on the 13 marathons in 15 days thing, and he's been out there crushing all these marathons. So kudos as well to Keenan. Just amazing how he's out there just crushing marathons day after day after day. Just simply mind-boggling that you can do that many in 1 year, and one lifetime for that matter. So getting into this week's episode, Jack Rubelcave, my 24-year-old traveling companion with whom I've previously traveled to Portugal, the Azores, and Ecuador, we took an amazing 3.5-week-long trip to Asia this fall, and we want to share with you some of our adventures and inspire you to seek some of your own. We carried nothing but a backpack, took 13 flights, visited 7 incredibly interesting countries, and probably spent less than $1,000 each for the entire trip. We've been sharing some of our formula as well as the exotic sights, food, and fun that we had. In the previous two episodes, we covered Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, and Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. And in this one, we talk about the crazy times we had in Thailand and Bali, Indonesia, including a surprise encounter with really big venomous water monitor lizards in a Bangkok park. And believe me, these things were prehistoric looking scary. An enchanting elephant sanctuary we visited in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and attempting to rent and drive scooters on the very chaotic streets of Bali. I think these travels have given me a much deeper understanding about other people and cultures, which we in the U.S. are often insulated from. So we had a fun time, and we're really happy to share these with you. In the next episode, we'll chat about beautiful Singapore and our tips for pulling off such a trip yourself, as well as where we hope to head next. And then later, I'll share with you my recent amazing mountaineering adventure in the Atacama Desert of Chile. And hey, as always, if you are looking for positive personal coaching to hit your 2024 goals, whether you're training for track events all the way up to ultra marathons, whether you're young or old, please drop me a note at silly_billy@msn.com or on Facebook or Instagram messengers. Okay, now here is Jack Rubelcave and me. Hi, Jack. We're finally getting around to part three of this trip here. We've had so much to talk about already.
We have had too much to talk about, hence the part three.
Yep.
We thought this was going to be a one-parter, and yeah, turns out we're back here.
Right. But hey, you know, we have some great countries to cover here. I mean, when I was just kind of going through notes, I mean, there was so much that occurred in all these countries. So we're going to go through Thailand, Bali, and Singapore, and then we're going to kind of wrap things up a little bit, talk about how we managed to pull this off for such an affordable price and on all these sketchy airlines and what have you.
Right. Yeah, the logistics is going to be a fun thing to talk about later on.
Yeah. So in any case, we finished off last time talking about being in Taiwan. We were mostly in Taipei. And then we went on to Thailand.
Yeah, we hopped on I think it was like a 4.5-hour flight over to Thailand. I didn't know that that any of the flights we took were going to be that long, but it was kind of a long one on, I don't know if I want to say the frontier of Taipei or Taiwan, but yeah, we were on Tiger Air Taiwan, and it was a pretty tight squeeze on that plane, if I remember correctly. And
was it Tiger Air? I forgot. Yeah,
Tiger Air.
I forgot about that one. Yeah, I remember that.
And I was in the middle for that flight, unfortunately. But yeah, we got there, and
well, first of all, you remember the airport there in Taiwan? Remember we were sitting in those big lounge chairs before we got on the plane there?
Yeah, the airport in Taipei was really interesting. It was like there really wasn't much at the airport there. We got to the airport, got our stuff, you know, whatever got through. We're going to get some food, and there was like one place to eat in like a major Asian city, a major travel hub that, you know, a lot of places. There's a lot of connections through there,
right,
and things like that. There was nothing, past security. So
yeah, and then but we were going through the whole part of the airport. It was really nice. It was a nice airport, but our gate for Tiger Air or whatever it was like down the escalator, and we were in this, like this gigantic room.
Yeah, it felt like a bus terminal. There was like 20 gates down there, but it was they were all just used at separate times, you know. Yeah. And it was like we were like gate 22-B, you know, like we were at one of those kind of like lower bowl kind of gates. Like they have a DIA with like the small planes fly out of to the local places, but
yeah
they didn't pull out the jet bridge for Tiger Air Taiwan. It was another one of those hop on the bus and, you know, board, scan your boarding pass and then hop immediately on a bus and get crammed full of people.
Yeah, that's
they
right
drive
yeah.
you 5 minutes to your plane and then you get on. We had that a lot on this trip over in Asia. And yeah, the recliner chairs were pretty cool though. Like the room was so big, and it felt like it was just our flight down there. It left relatively late at night, so I feel like it was just our flight in the big room. So there was just like all these like recliners that like had plug-ins, and they were really comfy.
But those were the only plug-ins there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were kind of, we grabbed on, and I remember I went and got something to eat. And I found something vegetarian to eat, and then I had to like wolf it down because then all of a sudden, like, it's time to board the plane.
Yeah, well, actually, we sat down there. There was a vending machine, I think, down there, but there was like the one restaurant, and I was hungry, and I think you were hungry too.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, you stay here. I went and got food. I think I got, I don't know, I think I got like an egg sandwich, something like that, potentially. I got some sort of rice thing and some drinks, but that was it. Like there was like one spot to eat.
Right.
And there was no souvenir shops, no stores. Once you get through the duty free, it was just very, very nice, but very like basic almost, you know,
yeah.
Like
yeah,
bus terminal esque.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
Then we finally landed in Bangkok after a few beers on the plane and, just trying to pass the time as best as we could with obviously no entertainment, no nothing, you know, on those kind of planes. Get to Bangkok, and like that was pretty exciting too, to get to like a completely new part of the world. And I was super excited to see what the humidity was going to be like, which we couldn't really tell once we got off the plane, but we got through the airport, got through customs, which I think was pretty quick.
Yeah.
And then stepped out to, you know, have our Grab driver pick us up. And Grab is just another Uber app, essentially.
Yeah, Asian Uber.
Uber. So we were getting in our Uber, and it was an intense wave of humidity like I've never felt before. That's for sure.
Yep.
In Bangkok at like midnight, I think, is like when we got
in
there.
Yeah, no, we got in really late, and we took this Grab to the hotel, and classic for us, we're in it was a decent hotel, but you know, we decided we're going to go out and get some food, and we're walking through this area that was so sketchy at that hour of the night.
I use the word culture shock quite a bit, and that's like what I look for when I travel, and I got a ton of it on this venture out to get food, because all the places that we had been in Asia had been relatively, I mean, clean, number one, respectful, number two. There wasn't a lot of like, hey, buy this, come eat at my restaurant, this kind of thing. And that was just all out the window in Bangkok instantly.
Yeah.
And we walked by a humongous pile of trash right outside of the hotel.
Right.
Like going, we just were like picking a direction. We went left or right. I think we took a right or whatever, and there was just a humongous pile of trash, and they were like all over the street, these piles of trash.
Yeah. No, it was like they were like going to get to cleaning up here at some point in the middle of the night, but wow, yeah, it was pretty crazy. And there were just people, just teeming amount of people out there, and they all seemed hostile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did. It was like there was, there was like a market, a night market right next to kind of where the hotel was that seemed to have like shut down at that hour.
Right.
Or that time of, or that day of the week, whatever it was. And it seemed like the market had shut down, but there was still just like people out that,
right.
The kiosks and stuff weren't set up anymore to buy stuff at, like items wise, but restaurants were still open, you know,
yeah, Thai, remember there
massage
was
massage places were still open.
Yeah, well, a block over from where our hotel was, there was this whole row of nothing but Indian restaurants.
Yeah,
it was crazy. Yeah, they were wall to wall. Some of them said veg, some of them said, you know, veg and non-veg or whatever. But and Indian food probably would have been really good. But we looked at these restaurants and we're like, I don't know.
It was a lot of that. There was a guy that on a bike that was wheeling. It looked just like a bunch of multicolored hot dogs. All like it were just you could buy them. I don't know how many baht they were exactly, but they seemed cheap. And I was just like, I can't imagine what one of those tastes like right now.
No.
So we actually ended up just kind of walking around, looking at things, looking for something to eat pretty intensely. I mean, we were pretty hungry. And part of the reason we were so hungry is because we couldn't get a true dinner in Taipei because there wasn't a ton of options
on
the side of security. So we ended up just at 7-Eleven.
Yeah, some convenience store that had an ATM in it. When even like we kept walking past these crazy alleys where there'd be ATMs, and we're like, yeah, I don't know if I want to get cash here because, you know, we're probably going to get mugged for it. And yeah, we finally found, I think there was some sketchy ATM outside the 7-Eleven convenience store or whatever, and got some random snacks.
Yeah, got some. I'm trying to remember what I had. I just got some spicy chips, I think, or or whatnot. And the kicker was the route that we took to the 7-Eleven was like out to the street, took a right, and then back in, took another right type thing. So we're still on like our side of the street, and we went through like this whole maze, it felt like, market, everybody trying to get us into everywhere, getting offered millions and millions of massages. Like it was chaos at 1 a.m. or whatever time it was at that point. And we finally get to the 7-Eleven, which we had taken like three rights essentially to get to this like 7-Eleven through this like almost square. But then we hit this like dead end. And I knew if we could just like get over the building right where the 7-Eleven was, we'd be right back at the hotel.
Right.
But instead we had to like walk back through the entire thing we just came through and get the same heckling and the same everything with our food and snacks and everything like that to get back to the hotel. So we got it from both ends, and we were just looking at each other like, we don't want to get sick on our first night in Thailand by eating something out of this guy's cart that he's wheeling around, or I don't know. We didn't want to take any chances necessarily, so we just stuck to the chips and stuff.
Yep. Yeah, what was amazing is the massage parlors were like packed at that hour.
Packed.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I who knows what goes on in there, but they'd have a whole menu of different services outside that you could buy, and who knows what you could have bought inside there. But, they were packed.
They were packed, and they were working outside to try to get more clientele in.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even know if the streets were necessarily busy with people looking for that or to eat or anything like that. Like, it didn't seem like there was even a lot of locals out that were, like, out to be out. It just seemed like there was a lot of people trying to get the bare minimum amount of people on the street into whatever they were, including us.
Yeah, and what's interesting is this whole market area. Our last night in Bangkok, we did walk through there while it was all open, and it was a teeming outdoor market, you know, like we've seen in a lot of countries in Asia. But after it was closed, obviously, it was a whole different atmosphere there than what it was like during the day.
Mm-hmm. The post game was a lot different
than
the game itself. And the market itself, that last night in Bangkok, we looked for a couple different things in a couple different, I mean, in every country we go to together. I mean, I get a shot glass, and Stahl gets a flag and a magnet. Like, there's just like certain things we like to collect from everywhere. And we had a tough time finding some of this stuff or stuff that we wanted in Thailand specifically. So we hit the market that last night to, I think, try to find you a flag and some other stuff like that. I think you got like a soccer kit there.
Well, yeah, what I bought was one of the Chang
yeah.
Jersey. And I just wanted the jersey, but it came with the shorts too, which is cool. but yeah, Chang is a brand of beer there, and mm-hmm. they sponsor, I don't know, whatever team's jersey I bought there. It was cool though.
You know, actually, what I think I was really looking for in that market that time was I was getting my girlfriend a little spoon from everywhere. Oh, and yeah. I think I actually did have a shot glass, and I think you might have had a flag, but we went into the madness to try to get a little tiny little spoon. And it took us probably good 30, 45 minutes perusing this market before I found what I was looking for. And then, yeah, we ended up getting some other cool stuff along the way too.
Yeah, no, I never found a flag there. That was the only country. And there were Thai flags flying everywhere, you know, on buildings and such. That was the only country I could never find a flag to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At least you didn't get ripped off trying to buy one.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later, but still, yeah. Interestingly, too, we did take a walk through. There was like that 6 or 7 story like fashion mall we walked into,
mm-hmm.
and it was just crazy how, I mean, just the clothing stalls. Just I mean, the amount of different vendors they had that you could buy clothes and such at there. And then remember we ate at that food court on the top level there,
mm-hmm.
and you had to buy like these vouchers. It was really complicated.
It was,
yeah.
It was. I mean, nothing seemed to be as simple as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Thailand.
Yeah, Thailand had, you know, again, Americans always get accused of ostentatious spending, you know, consumerism. But Jesus, Thailand had some serious-ass malls there. Like Siam Place mm-hmm. is a pretty outrageous shopping mall there, isn't it?
It was. We spent some time there for sure. Before that, and I guess this would just be like our next morning. One of the things Dahl wanted to do was go to the Royal Palace, and that's what it was, right? Was mm-hmm. the Royal Palace?
The Grand Palace.
The Grand Palace.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we hop in a Grab, and man, I guess we left the hotel like relatively early that next day to try to get there, to try to get out and see Bangkok, and we're going to the Grand Palace. The streets are 100% full. At all times, at least in the part of town that we stayed in.
Yep.
Trying to identify the Uber that was coming to pick us up when all the cars looked exactly the same.
Right.
And it was either a car or a scooter of some sort, you know?
Yeah. Well, or remember the tuk-tuks or tuk-tuks, however you call them.
Oh, yeah, the tuk-tuks, yeah.
Yeah, they had those, and they drive on the left side there.
They do.
To it, yep.
So, that adds to the confusion and the humidity and the smog. I mean, we were sitting there trying to figure out when our guy was going to pick us up in this Grab. And again, like the Grabs look just like cabs, basically. They're like green and yellow type thing. They're not like personal vehicles. I wouldn't assume, at least. They look a lot like taxis. And we got a guy instantly to come pick us up, and it said he was like 1 minute away for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
He was just sitting on the opposite side of the road, stuck in this huge traffic jam.
Right.
Huge traffic jam. And then we were in this guy's Uber once he actually picked us up for quite a while trying to get to the Grand Palace, which wasn't far away as the crow flies, but it took us a long time to get there. And it felt like midday.
Yeah.
By the time we got there. We left in the morning, felt like midday.
Yeah. Well, what it got me about, you know, during the ride is like it's interesting that the city, you got all these buildings that are, you know, very ornate. There are a lot of government buildings there.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like kind of a military police state there.
It does.
And giant portraits of the king and the queen and the previous king and queen mm-hmm. on buildings everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And what's interesting is learning a little bit there that the previous king had been on the throne for like 60 years. And he was really loved by the people there. I mean, he'd led them through, you know, through the Vietnam War era, just everything. I mean, he was loved by the people. And the current king has been on the throne for like 10 years, and they don't like him at all. The guy is considered like a playboy, philanderer. He's just out there just like taking advantage of his situation. And
he doesn't live in Thailand either, right? He doesn't live in Thailand full time. He has
in Switzerland,
residency
or
in Germany or
something. Yeah, something
like that.
Right,
so
yeah.
He isn't even there most of the time. And I think that's part of the gripe that the Thai people have with him.
Right.
From what we gather talking to people. But Yeah, the portraits of the king and queen were pretty alarming to me. They were humongous.
Yeah.
And I mean, they were everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, the previous king was considered like a deity, a god. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they feel the same way about the current guy, but probably in some level. But yeah, the previous guy, I mean, Thailand actually had laws, and probably still do, that if you say anything negative about the royal family, you could be thrown in jail.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's how highly the royal family was regarded there.
It was weird being in a country like that, too, because obviously we've traveled to places that are monarchies in the past, just England, you know?
Yeah.
But this country felt different by how in your face it was.
Right.
That there's a royal family here. This is how we do things. That's kind of how it felt to me. Yeah. It had a different vibe to it than any other monarch country I've been to before.
Yeah.
And
well, it's not a democracy, you know?
Even when we landed in Chiang Mai, which I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but we flew to Chiang Mai in Thailand just for a day. When we pulled up to the gate, I look outside my window and there's just a giant portrait of the king and queen right where I can see from the plane facing the tarmac. You know, like they want people to be the first thing they see is the royal family.
Yep, absolutely. When I talk about portraits, I mean, some of them were like on the side of buildings, you know, like 15-story tall buildings, and the portrait goes from, you know, from the ground floor to the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty crazy. So I think as though we get to the Grand Palace, which is absolutely amazing. And during this little excursion, we also went to Wat Po, which is another temple next to it, so we can kind of talk about them together. But first of all, though, we found out, though, even though we're walking around in the most god-awful heat and humidity and we're wearing shorts like typical American tourists, you can't go in without long pants.
Yeah, what a shock that was.
Right.
And I can't lie, I liked the idea of going to the Grand Palace. I didn't know what it was. I hadn't really done any research on Bangkok specifically. So I'm sitting in the Uber, you know, I'm just like, please get me out of this Uber. You know, it was like what I was thinking. Because it had taken so long to get to where we were going. I just wanted to get out and do whatever. We do pick up lunch, though, before we go in.
Right.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, it was a good meal.
We get some lunch, some pad thai, had to have it. And then we're going to go into the place, and I'm thinking, in the back of my head, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so hot. I just want to like sit and find some shade or a smoothie or something. And, you know, and we're like, we're going to go into this thing. And I was like, okay, it's just the Grand Palace. This isn't going to take crazy long, you know?
Right.
And I'm kind of in a negative mindset at the time. And then I see the sign that says you can't go in without long pants. Right. And I'm like, yes, we're not going to go in. We don't have long pants. And then I, like, almost simultaneously hear tons of people behind me just like, pants, pants, you need pants, you need pants. And they were like 100 baht to like rent these pants. And they were light and airy and they had elephants all over them. Exactly what you would think of if you think of, you know, pants from Thailand. They have the circular designs and the elephants and the colors and everything. And so I'm like, oh, man. We're going to have to rent these pants, aren't we, to go into this thing?
Yep.
And
and 100 baht was like $3, I think. Or two,
not, yeah, yeah, not $2 much. What,
yeah, right. Yeah, so we rented
it. It might have been cheaper than that, honestly.
Yeah.
It might have been like 50 baht or something to rent them. But I remember being really cheap to where it was just like, okay, we have to do it.
Yep.
And even to get into the palace was like 500 baht, which still wasn't very much, however much it was. $15 maybe like 12, something like that. So the pants were pretty much a steal, and I was like, you know, this will be fun. This will be funny. Let's do this. So we get the pants, we put them on, look ridiculous.
Yeah, and all the tourists look ridiculous there, because you could always spot the tourists wearing.
You could definitely tell who the tourists were, because the tourists all had the fun elephant-printed pants on,
right?
Which was probably 80% of the people inside of the palace itself, which the palace itself, It was huge. It was not what I expected. It was gigantic. I expected one kind of building that you would look at from the outside and then going inside and seeing things. That's part of the reason I was excited to do it, was I was like, get me out of the heat.
Right.
But it felt like an outdoor museum of sorts. And there were statues everywhere. And there were big buildings on the inside.
Right.
I'm not sure what you would refer to them. I was going to say mosques where you go to church.
Well, they were Buddhist temples.
Yeah. So they were all over the place. And there was like a walkway. I mean, the Royal Palace was fenced in by a huge stone wall. Right. And on the inside of that stone wall, on the inside, was like a covered area where you could walk. And it was just like these most detailed paintings of all sorts of things
right.
on the entire wall. And you could have got lost in there for days,
yeah.
I feel like, by looking at everything. It was incredible. And the architecture is crazy. And it was really cool to see the architecture change from Tokyo to Seoul to Taipei to Bangkok, which was a lot different. You know,
oh, yeah.
It was a lot different there. And to really soak all that in with all of our other elephant pant wearing tourists was a really cool experience for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Grand Palace, I mean, they had all these spires and, you know, temples and the paintings, and most of the stuff was gold.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was so amazing looking. And I mean, these things were adorned with jewels, even. I mean, like something that would be like, I don't know, 3-4 stories tall, covered yeah. in jewels. I mean, it was pretty staggering.
It really
was.
The
amount of work that had to have gone into build this whole area. I mean, I don't know land area very well. I mean, it was acres and acres. I mean, I'm thinking probably 8 city blocks in one direction and maybe mm-hmm. 5 city blocks in another direction. I mean, how huge this was. Yeah.
It took us about, and we did stop, took pictures, you know, like did the whole touristy thing, but I right. think we were in there for like 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
It was significant. And it definitely started to be like, wow, I need to get these pants off at some point because they were light and airy, but just having pants on in general was...
Yeah, it was tough.
It was tough. And at one point, like, we got a water and he handed me the water. Finally, we found some water. He handed me the water and I was like, oh, this was sitting... Like, this obviously was sitting in like some ice or something, and right. it wasn't. It was just the amount of condensation that was on the bottle was like taking it out of a cooler.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy how.
Yeah.
How but human but it was.
There were a couple of temples we went into there where, you know, like they had service kind of things going on. I mean, you just go in there and it's just stunning. I mean, you look at something that huge, just it's all gold and jewels, and it's just absolutely amazing what they built there. And then, we went over. Oh, you remember actually there was that orange cat in there that nipped me on the hand?
That was at the next one.
Oh, was it at Wat Po that happened?
That was at Wat Po, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we finished that day up, basically saw everything we could see, returned the pants, bought some of our own, actually, because we had to return them to her.
Right.
And we ended up buying some to have. Mine... The ones that I brought home, I wore them once, I washed them, and they are like super tiny now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, don't fit me at all tiny.
Oh, no.
So now they're Kate's,
yeah.
basically.
Oh, wow. I haven't washed mine. I'll have to be aware of
that. Yeah, I'd be careful.
Wash them only in cold water or
probably
something.
Probably wouldn't dry them.
No, don't put them. Oh, yeah. No, because they're probably just pure cotton or something.
They are tiny. Like, they were... They fit me pretty good at the time.
Right.
Over clothes. And now I can't even get them on.
So yeah.
Kind of a bummer right. there.
Yeah, that is. Because, we kind of like those pants. And
yeah.
Yeah, I think we bought them for about, you know, maybe 3 times what it cost to rent them anyway. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got a couple shirts, too. I was pretty envious of Stahl here. He got the better shirt and the better pants, in my opinion. Mm. I mean, and he color coordinated so well. He was wearing this blue... dry fit kind of running shirt that day and ended up with a blue and white pair of elephant pants. And, you know,
me, fashionista.
I guess so. He ended up getting a really cool elephant shirt too. And yeah, I mean, it was a fun day. And then we hopped in a tuk-tuk after that and went to the next place, which was Wat Pho.
Yeah.
And
and the tuk-tuks are, how do you describe them? They're just,
they're kind of like a trike. Almost,
yeah,
with seats on the back, but like you know those bikes that you leave a sporting event and there's always the biker guys outside with yeah. like the carriage in the back. It's basically that, but a motorized version, and they go fast.
Yeah,
like,
but they we're enclosed in this thing though.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and they do go fast because this is not a bicycle thing.
Yeah,
like a rickshaw kind of thing. Yeah, what are they called? Pedicabs in here. But
pedicabs.
Yeah, but no, this was motorized and highly polluting, I'm sure. But yeah, it was kind of interesting just zipping around on that thing there. And then he took us over to Wat Po, and mm-hmm. that's where they have the reclining Buddha. mm-hmm. which is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
This is a Buddha that's lying on its side, basically. And it's solid gold, and it's probably, I don't know, 30 yards long? I mean,
oh, no.
40 yards long?
I think 50 yards.
50, okay, yeah.
It's big. It's bigger than 30 yards long.
Yeah.
It was long. It was really long. It took me a few minutes to even walk from one side of it to the other, kind of through people, you know?
Oh, sure.
And I think it's longer than the 40-yard dash for sure. Yeah. It's huge, and it's tall, too.
Yeah.
And it's inside as well. So the building that it's in is also equally as gigantic. So it was really cool in there. They had a lot of, I don't really know how to describe them. They look kind of like when you put whipped cream on the top of something, that shape, whatever shape would be.
Kind of like when you get a custard cone.
Yeah, like an ice cream cone. Right. They have like ice cream cone looking things that have like big pointy tips on them, but mm-hmm. they're so detailed with the jewels and with
gold
and drawings and everything. And Watfo had a lot of those and as well as temples and stuff too. But the ice cream cone thingies stand out to me there, as well as the Laying Buddha, of course, because that's the main attraction there.
Right.
Yeah. And at the end of that, at the end of Watfo, there were some wildcats just kind of hanging out.
Well, feral cats. They weren't wild. They weren't like, you know, lions.
And I don't know. I kind of blame myself for this a little bit. Stahl's a cat guy. He's got a few cats. One of them was just running on my shoulder a second ago. And
yeah, that was Judge, yeah.
And there's this cat that like seems sort of friendly. It was an orange cat. I mean, you should just never trust orange cats anyways, I guess. But there's like, and he was letting Stahl pet him a little bit, but seemed a little on edge, you know? And then he like rolled over or something, right? He like got on his back and I was like, oh, he's like,
yeah,
he wants you to pet him. And just bit into Stahl hard, drew blood. I was like, oh no. That's a disaster.
Well, I lived, but yeah. Yeah, that was pretty funny, the attack cat there.
You never trust the orange cats.
Nope.
Never trust them. It was also weird. I mean, another weird detail, because I remember these two things kind of together, was right after you got bit by that cat, you needed to find a place to wash your hand off.
Right.
And we went into... we found the nearest restroom we could. And it wasn't uncommon for women to be in the restrooms anywhere in Asia. They were in there cleaning simultaneously.
Right.
And there was one woman in that restroom. She was just kind of sitting there in the corner, and she had, like, some fruit with her. And I walked out.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, do you want a banana? To me, I said, no, I'm good. Because I saw her there. I thought she was selling bananas, too, but she wasn't. I think those were... her bananas. You tried to buy a banana from her.
Yeah.
And she was like, these aren't for sale. It was just really awkward. It was pretty funny though, because it definitely seemed like she was selling them, but I don't know what she was doing in there. You know? She was just hanging.
Yeah, just hanging in the bathroom, not cleaning, not anything. And I don't know.
Would not sell you some of her fruit though. And that was just pretty comical, a few minutes there between those two things going on.
Right. So, yeah, I'm trying to think, before we headed off to Chiang Mai, you know, I remember we were walking around, speaking of odd things there, one of the really weird sights there was they had Tim Hortons there.
And, yeah.
I mean, if anybody, you know, Americans may not know Tim Hortons real well unless you're a hockey fan, but Tim Hortons is like the big thing in Canada for convenience stores. They, all over Canada, that's where everybody goes to get their coffee. It's kind of like 7-Eleven, Dunkin', whatever, you know, for Canadians. And of all places, they had a Tim Hortons in Bangkok. I thought that was hilarious.
That was crazy to see.
Yeah.
For sure.
Didn't get any Timbits there. That's what that's what they're known for, but oh well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we should have maybe.
Yeah.
But there was too many things to try, you know?
Yep.
Too many things.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a lot of walking after that. We walked all the way from Watfo back to the train. We took the train actually a little bit, public transit after that, but we walked all the way there through kind of a sketchier neighborhood, I would say.
Kind of through a university neighborhood there.
It definitely felt a little bit sketchier. There was a lot of people selling like electronics,
right,
and stuff like that on that walk. And yeah, we made a lot of like ice cream stops when we were in Thailand. We needed something to like cool down, right. So we would hit like a 7-Eleven, get a little ice cream bar type thing, and
yeah. Now I'm just trying to remember something. When we checked into the hotel originally, was that the place that asked us?
Oh, yeah.
Made us sign something said no smoking in the room and no durian.
Durian. Yeah,
right.
So yeah. I was actually about to bring that up, which is funny you bring it up because we went on this huge long walk through the city to get to the public transit site. We go in and there's virtually no security, but it just said there's like a big sign right in front of where you're going to board the train that says no durian. And this is the second time we had seen that, because when we did check, when we checked into the hotel, he was like, "You don't need durian, do you?" And we said, "No."
Yeah.
What the heck is durian? We didn't know
right
what that was. And then I see it again when we're about to go into the train, and I was like, "We should figure out what that is and why you can't have it."
Yeah, and it's just anywhere. Fruit. It's a fruit. What's
it
looks
like
here?
A cantaloupe, like a spiky cantaloupe thing, kind of. Yeah. Anyways, yes. Let me. Yeah, we take the train back. We do a couple things. I don't know how interested your listeners will be in this. And the durian story will continue.
Oh, yes.
Hold on. This is how it starts, you know, was those two interactions. I'm not sure how interested the viewers will be in this kind of story, but we got back to like central Bangkok where we were kind of staying by the Siam Center and stuff. Got some great pad thai that night. Just like a little food cart outside. And I'm walking by, and one of the things I'd heard about Thailand was that you could get, you know, really cheap, fake, expensive shoes here in Thailand. Yeah. You know, like they just have all the fakes all over the place. You can pay like $5 for a, you know, $10,000 pair of shoes in the United States. Not a real pair necessarily, but like that you can get shoes for cheap there. And I was walking by and I saw a pair that I had been kind of wanting but was never going to spend the money on, like a $2,500 pair, Travis Scott's. Ended up getting them for like $30, and I feel like I grossly overpaid for them, but I was like, wow, this is a great deal. They look pretty real, pretty,
right,
you know, pretty everything on my feet. And I was able to leave Thailand with some great pad thai in my stomach and some Travis Scott's that I had to carry around for the rest of the trip, which I did not have room for in my bag, but able to make it work. So, and there was a lot of stuff like that in Thailand. Like I mentioned the electronics places that we passed, like there just looked like so much in there, TVs, keyboards, like all sorts of stuff that was all cheap. Like everything was like way under market value that you would pay almost anywhere else in the world, I would say. So, the only thing that really wasn't cheap that day, in my opinion, was the tuk-tuk. The tuk-tuk was like as much as it cost to get into the palace.
Yeah, no, that's true.
It was expensive for sure. So, and it was like a 3-minute ride.
Yeah.
We could have walked. We just wanted to take a tuk-tuk. So, the things you were able to get in Thailand were definitely different than everywhere else on the trip, and they were cheaper than anywhere else we had been to this point. But it was really fun to walk around and look at that kind of stuff for sure.
Yeah. So in between, we went to Chiang Mai, but the last day we were back in Bangkok. So we'll just continue talking about Bangkok a little bit here. I remember there was a place I wanted to go take a run to. I saw it on the map. Actually, you know what? I just thought of something. Before I get into that, I want to talk about, I went to the Jim Thompson house. You didn't go.
I did not go.
You did not want to do that. It was a really cool thing. This guy, Jim Thompson, he was an American pilot during World War II, fell in love with the Thai people and started a silk company, became like this huge silk company. It still exists. You're able to tour his house, and it was pretty cool, interesting thing he had there. But I ended up buying my mom this like really nice scarf there, made from the silk. So he developed this whole silk company, really high quality stuff. That's where I ended up buying my mom's Christmas gift there.
And, did she like it?
Oh yeah, no, she liked it a lot. It was very cool, and he was kind of an interesting story. I mean, he built up this big company, and then he was on a trip to, I think it was Burma, maybe, and disappeared. No trace. They never figured out whatever happened to the guy. So just a little aside there.
I remember the day. It was, again, one of those things where the first thing we were doing in the morning was between a couple things. And Stahl was like, yeah, let's go to the Jim Thompson house. And, I mean, I pride myself on being down for virtually whatever when I'm traveling. Like, anything is fun. I'm down to do anything. I blame my attitude that day on Vietnam, which we hadn't – we kind of talked about Vietnam in the first episode. But at this point in the trip, I was starting to get real stressed out about how the heck we were going to get into Vietnam.
Yes, you are a nervous traveler, Jack.
I'm not a nervous traveler. But I am a nervous, I can't control this type thing. And we were just waiting on the Vietnam visas at the time. And at this point, the reason I think it was such a kind of scary situation was I think that we were going to Bali for the weekend. So we didn't expect for any of the things to be able to process over the weekend. So when we were leaving Thailand on like Friday night, I think, or something like that, potentially, there was some reason where I was like, okay, if we don't have this by the time we leave Thailand, we're going to start sweating a bit, you know, like we're going to start sweating a bit. And I just couldn't shake the sweats about that kind of day. And ironically, I was like doing, you know, some research or whatever to see if we even needed the visa. And then I was like, you know, I should probably check and see if we need a visa to get into Bali. And I was doing all this while Stahl was at the Jim Thompson house. And I looked up if we needed a visa for Bali, and it said, yeah, you need a visa to get into Bali. And I was like, oh, no. Like, this is just – this is not good, you know? Yep. So – but then we ended up able to get a visa to get into Bali upon arrival. Right. So it ended up being no big deal. But, yeah, that was –
yeah, but the Vietnam one was still hanging out there.
That was kind of what I was up to at the time. And I'm just so – I mean, I'm not, like, angry at – the Vietnam immigration people, but I definitely wish that would have not went the way it did. So I could have done things like went to the Jim Thompson house and enjoyed myself a bit more those last couple days in Bangkok, especially.
Yeah. No, I told you they were screwing with us. I knew it all along. They were just, Vietnamese were just screwing with Americans.
They certainly were.
Yep. So, but in any case, what I was going to get to there a couple minutes ago was, I was looking for a place to take a run in Thailand, and I never did run there because running from our neighborhood, as we were talking about in the very beginning, it was so nutsy, congested, and I just couldn't picture a single place I could have safely run on the sidewalk or, you know, a lot of times, okay, if the sidewalk crowded, you run on the street a little bit, but you'd get run over there. I mean, there was no place I could imagine running in Thailand where I wouldn't have gotten killed, you know? But I had looked at this Lumphini Park that I thought, okay, that looks like a place you might be able to go run around. It was, the problem was getting there, and I would have had to figure out some sort of public transportation or a grab or something to get there. So I never did run in Thailand, but we did actually go over. We took a train, went over to this Lumphini Park, and it was hot and humid as hell. We start walking around this park, and all of a sudden, we see these creatures there. It's like the creature from the lagoon there, they're called water monitors, and they are like giant lizards, you know, like alligators, and they're just walking around the park, and, you know, people are just walking around, and, you know, like, and these things are like scary as hell looking.
It was pretty scary. And we didn't, I don't think we knew at all what they were.
We had no idea when we walked ahead of time that we were going to see this. Yeah.
No clue. So we just walked in and we saw one sitting on the thing, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then there was another, and then another, and I was like, whoa, this is like, why is there so many of these? And then we kept walking, and it said, do not feed the water monitors because they can get pretty aggressive or something like that, you know?
So, yeah, and people are like walking their kids around, you know, their infants, and there was a cat, I remember, that was just sitting there lounging around there, and it's like, these things look like they're going to eat any small creatures around here. I mean, we were even like, there were birds on the shore. We're like, is that thing going to go grab a bird or something? Yeah. And I mean, I got some cool video of these things walking, and they're kind of like, they say prehistoric looking, and the tongues are going in and out of their mouths. And I found out later on, these things are really poisonous.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I read that if you get bitten by one of those, you're dead. It's like no antidote or anything. And I heard even like the scales on them can be lethal.
Wow.
Yeah, and yet they're just walking around there. It was crazy.
That is crazy because it seems so calm, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's probably why you're not supposed to feed them, though.
Yeah, probably not.
I didn't know that at the time. I don't even think you told me that right afterwards.
No, I didn't know until I got home.
Oh, gotcha.
Because I'd posted the picture and somebody said, yeah, that's a water monitor. Those things are really dangerous. And I looked it up and it's like, oh, shit. You don't want to get bitten by one of those. It's all over. So, after we were going through the park there, I mean, it was a nice park and all, and we're kind of in a modern part of the city there. And I found out later on that, like, Bangkok's known as, like, the city of balconies. Like, you know, if you have money, you get one of those hotels and you get up on the balconies, you get these great views up there and everything, which, you know, we didn't quite do. We kind of stayed on the surface level there. And I found a place to eat. You went into the McDonald's there. Mm-hmm. And got some Thai McDonald's. The McDonald's there, by the way, was funny. All the they had Ronald McDonald statues outside them, and Ronald was in that praying pose.
Yeah, he was in a Buddha pose.
Yeah, thanking, and that's the way everybody was in Thailand. They would just thank you by going in that praying. But there was Ronald McDonald doing the same thing.
McDonald's in Thailand, by the way, too, was one of the most interesting ones I've ever been to, and I like to keep track of that. I mean, the menu was crazy. Interesting. It was really good as well. And it was definitely different. You know, it wasn't just, you know, McDoubles and Big Macs like some other countries I've been to. It was unique.
McWater monitors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hopefully not.
McPud Thai or whatever.
Yeah, they didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
I was hoping. That's what I wanted.
McDrunken noodles. That would be good. Yeah.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
But that place you ate at was pretty weird.
Yeah, there was like a Japanese festival going on. And so I just sat down and, you know, got served, you know, kind of like I'm at a Japanese restaurant in the outdoors there. It was pretty strange.
It was so hot, though. I came and found you because it was outdoors, so it's obviously hot and humid.
Right.
And then they were like cooking stuff right in front of you.
Yeah.
And it was hot, whatever they were cooking. So I was ready to get out of that spot.
Yeah. And I was drinking some Japanese beer there too, just trying to keep my bottle away from the heat source there. It was pretty bad.
Yeah. After that, we hopped on the train, saw a golf course. It looked really weird.
Yeah.
It was kind of like inside of a horse racing track, it seemed. I don't know. It was interesting.
Yeah. And like they had everybody, all the golfers had their own caddies. But the caddies didn't seem to really do anything. You know, they weren't like holding the pin on the greens. And it was kind of hard to figure out what the caddies were doing.
It was weird trying to figure out what was going on there. And it was even weirder because I couldn't tell where tee boxes were at all.
Well, there are no markers for the tee boxes.
Yeah, there was no markers for really anything. And then at a certain point, it was kind of like sunset. We were there. Everybody went in.
Yeah, it was like a figurative horn went off, and everybody just started marching into the clubhouse. It was pretty weird.
It was pretty weird, for sure.
Yep. But we just watched this actually from a train platform.
Mm-hmm. Because the course itself was really actually pretty well hidden from the street. I didn't even know it was there. We'd probably walked right by it.
Yeah.
It was pretty well hidden from the street, but on the train platform, you could see it pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. And
that was kind of our Bangkok experience. We only had 2 days there.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to mention is one thing that was really strange was that there was a 84-story tower right near our hotel. And it was like a luxury hotel or something in the middle of this whole crazy, sketchy neighborhood we were in. And they had like, I think they had mini golf somewhere like on an intermediate floor of the hotel and such.
Yeah, we didn't find that till the last night.
Yeah.
And we thought about going up, but it was so late. We were leaving so early the next day. I think our flight to Bali left at 6 a.m. So we had to be up like super early. So we decided not to give it a shot.
But in the middle of this trip, though, we took a quick day trip up to Chiang Mai, a couple cheap flights. What airline were we on? Was that like Air Asia or something?
That was an Air Asia. I think that was our first Air Asia experience. And Air Asia was nice.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
I don't really have a comp in American Airlines because the crappy ones are so crappy and the nice ones are so nice. It was kind of just very mid-tier, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, so we just took this little day trip up to Chiang Mai, which is up in the mountains. And one of the things is that my very first cross-country athlete that I coached at Denver Lutheran High School back in 1993, Joel Vanderkoy, has been running a Christian school in Chiang Mai for the last 25 years. And I know he's done great work growing that school and everything. So it was a great opportunity to go up there and go visit with him. I haven't seen him in many years. And so, yeah, we got out in Chiang Mai, and Joel picked us up there, and we had a little bit of a detour of sorts in that he had to go to the immigration office.
Yeah.
Apparently, and he's got his whole family there. He's got his wife and a couple kids, and they had to renew their whatever, work permits, visas, whatever, for them to stay in the country. And so, yeah, we got to experience a little bit of hanging out in the immigration office there while they got some papers processed.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and he took us to get some really good food, too.
Yeah, first we had a really great lunch. And, it was just like in a little shopping center there. And that was, I'm trying to remember what we ate there, but it's one of these things where it's like, we don't even know what we were ordering. But
It was native to northern Thailand, whatever it was. And
yeah.
It was like rice and a red kind of sauce and noodles of some sort and crispy things. It was super good. Coconut, too.
Right.
There was coconut in it as well. It was unbelievable, actually. It was spicy. I wish I knew what it was called. I'm sure I could figure it out based on context clues if I were to look things up, but it was super good. It was different, too, than anything else we'd eaten in Thailand to that point. So
yep.
When they say native to northern Thailand, it really was, because I didn't see it anywhere else.
No.
In Bangkok, so... I looked for it the second day because we went to Chiang Mai in the middle. We were like Bangkok, Chiang Mai, Bangkok.
So right.
That last day in Bangkok, I was looking for whatever that dish was called. Certain menus, just couldn't find it.
Right, right.
But it was really cool to hang out with Joel.
Yeah.
He is like doing really cool stuff there. And the way he got started and what he's doing in Chiang Mai was he was working with like human trafficking because people get trafficked across the border to... What's the country across the border that he was almost moved to?
Yeah, Burma.
Burma.
Or Myanmar.
Myanmar,
yeah. Right.
So, I mean, he got started there doing that, opened a school, you know, has his whole family, took us around. Like, I mean, it was pretty cool day. Cool day.
Yeah, what was amazing is that, you know, we were touring his school and it was after dark. And a lot of the teachers were still there. I mean, those people were, you know, working hard over there. But yeah, he's grown the school and you know, saved a lot of kids from human trafficking and everything. So yeah, just really impressive what he has created and grown there. It's just awesome.
It is awesome.
Yeah. But then kind of the highlight was he took us to this elephant sanctuary. We drove up into the mountains and very scenic drive and we just literally just driving to this elephant sanctuary and they didn't even charge us to go in there. And we just go in and first thing you know is like, okay, there's somebody there just like wrapping an elephant trunk around you.
I mean, one of the best afternoons ever for me, I think personally, just because of how it worked out, you know, like seeing elephants in Thailand was something that was on the list without a doubt, but doing it from Bangkok seemed logistically impossible almost with how long it would have taken with the amount of time that we had in Bangkok and with the Chiang Mai trip. So with how everything worked out to where we got to go with Joel number one and kind of be escorted by not a local, but you know, somebody that's been in the area for a long, long time and speaks the language and, you know, can take us around to the spots that he knows was awesome in general. And for him to have a spot like this, that again, you talked about scenic drive. It was like one of the most beautiful drives through what you think of when you think of Thailand, just endless amounts of green, everything
right
through the mountains, through what felt like the jungle at times, through everything, to pull up to this like dirt road, turn on and just see an elephant walking right next to you.
Right.
And they're just there. There's no, I mean, there's a little fence, right? Like a little wood fence.
Yeah, but there's really no enclosure there.
No enclosure, no anything to pull up and essentially just donate some baht to feed the elephant some stuff, which was
We bought four baskets of sugarcane and bananas to feed to the elephants. And that's all. I think we bought some drinks there, but that's the only money we spent there. It's like there was no admission, if you would.
And those elephant expeditions, if you'll say that I was speaking of from Bangkok, were like $200-$300 things. Took 12 hours.
And the other thing that should be mentioned is that, you know, we were looking at TripAdvisor with some of these elephant sanctuaries that talked about the cruelty that, you know, they had, like, you know, basically they were, you know, torturing these elephants, if you would, to perform tricks, and that they did not treat these elephants well at all. So, you know, if you are traveling over there, definitely look into making sure you go to a sanctuary that is not abusing the elephants. And so that was the cool thing about this place, is that it was very obvious these elephants were being treated very well compared to what we read about in TripAdvisor.
Yeah, that was one thing I was going to mention. Thanks for touching on that, because we actually, and the place that he's talking about specifically was actually a place in Bali, because we looked at, okay, if we can't do this in Thailand, can we go in Bali? And there was a place, and I was looking at kind of the reviews and how it worked and how we'd get there, and all it said was elephants in chains.
Right.
These elephants are in chains. And it was just kind of like, I don't want to go to that, you know? So for it to work out like it did, when I wasn't sure, even when we landed in Thailand, if we were going to get to do that, to get to do it like that, at a place like that, with people like that, was pretty awesome. And the elephants themselves they seemed to me pretty obviously really happy and content with what they were. They were just getting fed by random people all day, taking pictures.
Right.
You know, trying to take my shoe off of my foot, like really active and so close, up close and personal, you know?
Yeah.
And it was such a beautiful day, beautiful, not a cloud in the sky, it felt like.
Oh, no, there were clouds and they were beautiful, because we were getting towards, you know, the latter part of the day. And I remember, you know, almost like thundercloud kind of formations that just looked absolutely spectacular up there.
You're right. But it was great weather.
And I actually got such a kick out of watching you interacting with the elephants. You know, I told you before, you kind of had that childlike look when you're sitting there getting to feed the elephants and, you know, kind of interact with them. It just, I got a kick out of seeing that personally.
I mean, it was just so unique, you know, like, I don't think you get to do that. And you just, and if you do get to do that, it's at the expense potentially of the elephants you're giving it to,
right,
or your wallet. And it felt like neither there, you know? So it felt like I just wanted to buy as many buckets as I could.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I was supporting a good cause. It felt right, and it was awesome. Yeah. You know, like, it was really cool. And
yeah.
There was a baby one too.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, the baby was something else, yeah. But the place, if anybody wants to find it, is called the Elephant Cafe. It was ELEFIN. Mm-hmm. Cafe. So, you know, if you're in Chiang Mai and want to find a good elephant sanctuary to go hang out with the elephants, that would be the place to go.
I can't imagine endorsing another one more than this one. So, you know, and they had some Thai iced tea there, which was unbelievable in Thailand. So, if you didn't need any more reasons to go check this place out, if you're ever around in Chiang Mai, which I'm not sure how popular of a tourist destination Chiang Mai really is, but I think that people should check it out.
Well, it's pretty popular, but, you know, a lot of people in Thailand tend to go down to Phuket and some of the islands and the beaches and everything. So, but yeah, if you're going to spend some time in the mountains of Thailand, Chiang Mai was pretty damn nice.
Mm-hmm. But that's kind of all we got for Thailand, huh? Like.
Yeah, I think so. So, we may only have time for one more country at this rate, but from there we flew on to Bali, right?
We only have a couple days in each of these two places, so
right.
We'll see kind of time-wise what goes on. But
yeah, so Bali was different in that we stayed in a really nice resort there. It was, you know, as opposed to every place else where we stayed in kind of, you know, okay hotels kind of on the wrong side of the tracks, so to speak. We're always like a couple blocks away from the really nice part of town. But, Bali, we did splurge, if you would, to stay at a really nice resort. And it didn't cost much anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And this place was really just amazingly nice.
Mm-hmm. It was really cool. We got into Bali like midday. Like I said, we had that early flight
right
from from Bangkok. And it was funny. The first thing that I saw at the airport in Bali when I came out was the Circle K. Like, wow, that's so random. Why is there a Circle K at the airport in Bali?
It turns out they had a lot of Circle Ks there.
Yeah, the resort was awesome. It took like an hour to get from the airport to... We stayed in Ubud.
Yeah.
It's kind of in the middle of the island. And yeah, the resort was just full of trees and was like really kind of far away from the main road too.
Yeah.
Not far by car necessarily, but like it was like 5 minute walk from the road, you know? So it kind of felt quieter, which was a really cool change of pace from what we had just experienced in Bangkok.
Right.
From where we walked out of our door and were immediately met with chaos.
Yeah.
It was kind of nice to just, you know, be able to walk around the hotel and not, you know, just be in the hotel and in the resort.
Awesome. And everybody working at that resort was incredibly nice.
So nice.
Yeah.
So nice. It was the best hospitality I think I've ever received personally. Right. I mean, hi kitty.
Yep. You got Mo the kitten there.
Yeah, they were super nice, super helpful.
Yeah.
Although the first thing we did in most hotel rooms was open the safe and, you know, put our stuff in the safe that we want in the safe. And this safe, we put our stuff in, locked it, and it was locked. We could not get it back unlocked. But again, these people at the front desk came in and somehow wiggled the safe open.
Right.
Kind of scary, right?
Sure. Yeah, this resort though had you know, like that infinity pool there, and it was just gorgeous. What a relaxing spot. Interestingly, a lot of the tourists there were Russians, and I've heard a lot of stories about how Russians actually have almost wrecked Bali. The governor of Bali actually was going to prohibit tourists from being able to rent scooters, which is the major way to get around there. We'll talk more about the scooters in just a bit. Mm-hmm. But apparently because Russians were just creating such havoc there. So, the Russians have hit Bali big time. But one of the things that surprised me the most about Bali is, you know, we're going to Indonesia. And, you know, I hadn't, again, most of these things, I had not researched a lot going into this. I just kind of got on TripAdvisor and said, okay, what are we going to do here? And Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world by population. You know, it's just, I knew that going in. What I didn't know, though, is Bali is a Hindu island. So instead of being exposed to all the Muslim religion, you know, it was all Hindu. And they have shrines all over. It's different than the kind of like Buddhist shrines you see. They weren't quite as fancy, but you know, just a lot of elephants and, you know, very predominantly saffron yellow is the color and white. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a Hindu color.
They have like a flag, right?
Yeah. And you'd see that, you know, wrapped around elephant statues. I mean, on that main highway coming in, too, we passed by, like, one stretch of miles of places selling statuary for people to, like, put in their yards or whatever, you know, with Hindu gods or whatever. I mean, these things are so big, you'd have to use forklifts to move them. I mean, it was just impressive how much of the stuff they were selling
there. Yeah, it was like the Costco of statues. It went on forever.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and even when we were leaving the airport, I mean, like, they had those huge like a traffic circle with a huge statue inside with all this stuff going on there, you know, gold and white, and it was pretty impressive, but very different than what I expected.
It was different than what I expected, too. I mean, the pictures I had seen of Bali were pretty much all of the, like, northern part of the island. We were kind of central, and getting around Bali takes a while. The roads are small, and they're small, car on one side, one car on the other.
And again, they drive on the left. And,
yeah.
And I mean, the streets there are total chaos.
Mm-hmm.
I did do one run there in Bali, and it was always, you know, taking my life in my hands with that one.
But
Bali, first of all, near where we were staying, we went to this monkey forest. And I was going to actually, before we get in, because we needed money, we found the ATM there, and the Indonesian currency is really funny. The rupee is so cheap that, like, I think I got like 80 American dollars worth of currency there, and that was 2 million rupees.
Yeah.
So I come out of the ATM, I've got 2 1-million rupee
yeah.
Bills there, which is great. I was a millionaire twice over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that was funny.
Yeah. And so we, you know, needed some money. We go to the that's Monkey Forest that was there, and that was absolutely amazing. I mean, just hundreds and hundreds of these gray monkeys that were in there that were just hilarious.
Lots of personality on those things.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. They were doing all sorts of things, stealing people's stuff.
Right. Yeah, there was that one lady who was having like this whole wrestling match with that one monkey.
Yeah.
It was attacking her.
I mean, it was really cool. It was just, I mean, the words Monkey Forest do it justice. You know, yeah. It was a lot of monkeys in a forest, and it was kind of cool because it was nice and cool in there because there was a lot of high trees that the monkeys were playing in, and it was shaded and everything.
Yeah, true.
So it was a really cool first thing to do in Bali. And it wasn't expensive. Nothing was expensive in Bali.
Except the flag.
Yeah, except for the flag.
Right.
I seriously think that flag might have been the most expensive item you bought in Bali.
Could have been.
It probably was. I think it was probably more expensive than the Ubers, everything.
Right.
But anyways, so... Yeah, we went to the Monkey Forest.
Yeah, and the story there is just, it was really hard to find an Indonesian flag there, even though they were flying all over the place. And we searched through all these markets there and finally found the one near Ubud Palace. And
high and dry through the markets, too. We had asked everybody, because we went to this place right after the Monkey Forest, and he saw us like, do you have any flags? She was like, yeah, I have a giant one. You know, it was like full size. He was like, that doesn't super work for me.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'll make you one or something like
that.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah.
And we were like, okay. So I think that was like our last ditch effort, though, was to go back and get a small flag from this one lady next to the Monkey Forest.
Yeah. And they have the simplest flag. It's literally like a piece of red fabric and a piece of white fabric sewed together. That all their flag is a red stripe and a white stripe. But oh, well.
We finally find this, like, there were so many markets at Ubud Palace. We finally find this, like, one indoor market area back in, like, the back right corner of the place. We stumble across a flag, and I guess I'll let you take it away from here.
Well, it was just actually, I asked this guy, and he didn't have a flag, but he said, oh, but my sister does or something.
Right.
Yeah, and he had to go to this other booth and go over there, and he grabs this one flag over there, and then he tells me it was, you know, like 50,000 rupees or whatever, which, you know, turns out it's 20 bucks.
I thought it was like 30 bucks.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think it was, I thought it was 20, but it's still a ripoff.
Yeah, for a little tiny flag.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard him say the number and like my eyebrow popped up and I was like, there's no way you're going to buy this flag for that much, right? And you were like, done, deal. Gave him the Amex. You were like, yep, I'm doing this.
It was the only flag to be had there.
I was like, wow, that guy just ripped you off. And you were just so happy. You were like, I got one.
Got one, yeah.
Didn't matter.
Yeah. But, one thing, in the Monkey Forest, though, going back to that, I mean, the monkeys, like I say, they were sitting there, they were breaking coconuts, they were having sex with one another. And one of the things, though, in the Monkey Forest we saw, and then we saw it elsewhere, is for whatever reason, they sell bottle openers that are penises.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
Everywhere there.
There's a lot of, like... sex stuff in Bali, you know?
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, and we went to this like one waterfall type place there, and they were like, this guy was selling all these signs that were like, it was like, mom, I'm okay, or like spring break, whatever, just like typical vacation things. And they had like this whole section of like horny in Bali, this and I was like, what? I don't know what it is about Bali. I didn't know it had that kind of reputation, but definitely stuff like that everywhere, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the wooden bottle openers got me. I mean, and these penises came in all sizes, too. It was just kind of, I mean, they would have like whole displays of, there had to have been 100 of these for sale on there.
And they were at pretty much every souvenir shop place.
Yeah.
And even in the Monkey Forest, I got like a wooden monkey there.
Right.
And there next to the wooden monkey was just like a whole clothing rack of bottle openers and candle holders and stuff. Like that were just, it was interesting, for sure. I didn't know that about Bali going into it.
Mm-mm, no. No, and interestingly, you know, Bali, a lot of people just know it for the beaches and going surfing and everything, which we didn't do at all, actually. But I think the biggest adventure we had maybe on the entire trip was renting scooters to get around, because that is the way to get around Bali. I mean, they do have cars out there, but it's total chaos there. I mean, the scooters are zipping around between the cars and everywhere. So the hotel got us, you know, arranged for some guy to come out there with a couple scooters that we could rent. And I don't know if this is because of what was going on with the Russians or whatever, but basically their rule is they would not rent to somebody who didn't have experience on their scooters already. Well, it's like, how do you get experience in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know, it's this catch 22. So, you know, he's like, you know, showing us the scooter, and he's like, well, you've ridden this before. And I go, no. And immediately he's like, that's it. Game over. And I'm like, what? That's it? I mean, so yeah, we were totally nixed out right there. So then we went on into town. We figured, oh, we'll go find somebody else who rents us a scooter. We go into this, and there are a lot of scooter shops around there. We go into this one shop, and this woman is, you know, she's got scooters for rent there and everything. And it was all kind of, I forget how much it cost. It wasn't very much money.
It was like $3 for the day.
Yeah, exactly. It was pretty damn cheap. And she's like showing you how to use the thing, and she's not showing me anything at all. And I have no idea what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
I don't know how to turn this thing on. I mean, this is an Indonesian scooter. You know, these are, they were made by Honda, I think, weren't they?
They were some recognizable brand.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember the brand exactly, but.
Yeah. And as soon as she detected the fact that I had no idea how to even turn the goddamn thing on, it's like, okay, that's it. Give them your money back. It's like, well, okay, that's freaking great. So then we went on to a third place. We found, you know, it was on the main strip of town there. And, you know, now before we got there, we kind of got to a scooter lot. And we started looking. You started to explain to me. And I was actually, by this time, having a major meltdown with you because I was pissed. I'm like, Jack, like, you got to show me how this works. I got to be able to fake this at least. I said, yeah. I can't even fake this if you don't tell me or show me something here, you know? So I lost it with you there pretty bad.
I had a little tutorial. I didn't know what I was doing either. The guy at the beginning said, do you know how to ride this? And I said, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, yep, right. I do. I didn't know how to turn it on, though. And turning it on really was the only problem.
Right.
Because I didn't know how to do that either because I had never ridden one before. I was pretty confident. I was like, once I get on, it's a scooter. You know what I mean? It drives, whatever. But yeah, turning it on was kind of weird. You'd like hold both brakes, kick something. I don't know. It was kind of interesting, you know?
Yeah.
But I had finally gotten the hang of it at the second place. The guy actually turned my scooter on for me at the first place.
Right.
And I was just riding it around when he told Stahl he couldn't rent it. And by the time I got to the second place, I was able to turn mine on by myself. And I was like trying to test it out. I was trying to act natural as well, right?
Right.
I was trying to be like, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing here. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Stahl got denied a second time just because, honestly, we didn't know how to turn the things on.
Right.
They were kind of complicated to turn on. And finally, yeah, the whole, like, you used the word meltdown. I wouldn't describe it as that per se. I would describe it as frustration, you know?
Yeah.
Was going on, and I was like, listen, this is a scooter. We're going to try to get this exact one.
Right.
They were all pretty similar. You do this, this, and this. I was like, let's give it one more chance.
Right.
You know, let's give it one more chance. We find these guys. They take us like a 3-minute walk away to their garage where they're keeping their scooters. And I'm like, oh, dear.
Yeah. It's off. Yeah. We're off up an alley or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I was like, oh, no. And it was like this huge slope you had to drive down to get back to the alley, to get back to the main street, like where their office was. So. Again, we had practiced, everything was good.
Yeah, but it was perfect because I could test it out out of his view.
Yeah, it was actually really clutch because the garage was like kind of tucked away.
Right.
So I think you ended up speeding down that hill, straight into some stairs.
Yeah, no, I wrecked. So to go test it out in this alley, you had to go down this short, steep embankment. Well, I totally lost control of this thing right out of the chute and crashed into a flight of stairs. And so, you know, I got myself righted, and then I got to, you know, I took a couple trips up and down the alley, and I'm like, okay, I got this now and everything. But then when we go back to their office on the main drag there, we have to fill out the paperwork, and my shin is bloody. I'd cut my shin open. I'm sitting there trying to hide my shin so he doesn't see that I've already wrecked on his scooter. And, you know, we filled out the paperwork, and then we had to go and go fill it with gas.
Yeah, that was another adventure. It was funny because we finally had gotten the scooters, you know, after like this whole adventure of like, we're going to get the scooters. And then I'm about to take off onto the main street, and it is pandemonium.
Right.
Right. And this place is on the left side of the street. So the cars are coming right at me.
Right.
You know, because they drive on the left. And I was like, oh man, so we have to, we're doing this now, you know?
And like, you were scared. You were asking me like, hey, we don't have to do this.
You
were afraid you were going to kill me here.
I was a little afraid. I mean, I was afraid to drive that thing myself.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, is this the smartest decision we can make right now? Just wrecked. Your shin's bloody. We're about to hop out, you know.
Into the real deal here.
Into the Daytona 500, it feels like.
Yeah.
Is this smart?
Daytona 500 without rules, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And endless amounts of people.
Yeah.
And shorter. I mean, yeah, that wasn't even a great comparison. It was just... So we finally... I mean, we're just like, screw it. We're gonna go down the road like a mile and a half to the gas station. We've got to put gas in it.
Right.
And if we get there just fine, then we're good.
Yeah.
And we did. We got there. We got gas. We got out. Got some water. I was like, we can do this. Like, we can do this, you know?
Right.
So we rode the, you know, we rode them down to the waterfall area I was kind of describing earlier, which was kind of a bust.
Yeah. Although we stopped, I think, twice on the way to catch our breath.
Yeah.
It's hot and humid anyway. And we're driving down there and like, you know, we'd get several miles and, you know, especially when you had to make a right turn.
Yeah.
And you drive on the left. It was like hairy beyond belief.
It was tough.
Yeah. And we pulled over a couple times just to like, just catch our breath. Like, okay, we made it this far. Okay, mm-hmm. Good. All right.
It was scary. I mean, it once we got off kind of the main drag towards the waterfall and it was more open road, it was a great time. You know, it was a really good time, and it was exactly what I wanted to do in Bali, because I heard what you do there is you rent scooters.
How fast did those things get? We got up to 30, 40 miles an hour, I guess.
Oh, I think they went like 60 miles an hour. They could have.
Yeah, I don't think we did that.
The fastest I went was like 40.
Yeah, okay.
Which was pretty good. We really got out into kind of like what felt like the plains almost. You know, it was like pretty open to where we just like we're going to this waterfall.
Yep. So, yeah, we got down to this waterfall, and it was, we expected kind of this wild waterfall, and instead it was more like Water World. It was lots and lots of people were just there, you know, swimming around in the water, and, first of all, to get down there, we had to go down this just crazy staircase. It was...
It was a lot of steps. It said how many it was.
Yeah, actually, I wrote it down here. It was 165 steps. Yeah, so we had to go down this really steep staircase and get down there, and yeah, just all these locals, it seemed like, were just down there, like, swimming in the water, and...
It just wasn't that cool. I think we expected it to be more of a nature-y type of waterfall, and it was more of, like, an amusement type waterfall. We walked down this huge set of stairs, too, and I thought it was more than 165. It felt like more.
No, it felt like more going up, yeah.
Than 165, but...
Yeah.
To do all that, to scooter there,
right?
A little bit of a bummer potentially, but it was still beautiful. It was still cool.
Yeah,
And it was just nice to not be on the scooters anymore.
Yeah, true.
It felt really good to park the scooters and feel safe almost. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because it was definitely like, okay, we need a break before we head back. And then actually, we did stop and have a beer there. At some little cafe that was there. And then we're in the parking lot, and this guy tells us, oh, you got to go to this like coffee plantation.
Yeah. And did we have a beer?
Yeah.
It seems incredibly irresponsible.
Or maybe we had water. Yeah, maybe we just drank water there. It's true. Considering how sketchy those scooters were, probably shouldn't have had a beer.
I don't know if we did, though. I think it was water.
Yeah, it had to
have been. I remember where we were sitting.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. I was just curious for myself if I don't remember having a beer.
No, okay.
I know. I think I remember we talked about having a beer, and I was like, "Should we have a beer?"
Yeah,
before driving these things, especially.
Right.
Anyways, not that that would have done a ton. I was sweating everything out.
Yeah.
Instantaneously. Anyways.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah, but then they told us about this coffee plantation, and it was kind of up that country road-ish area, and we went in there, and it was actually really cool.
It was cool. Yeah. It was an interesting vibe at first. He was so nice and so welcoming. I was like, this is either awesome
or we're getting scared.
Really not awesome.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, there were only like a few people, you know, tourists who were even in there. You know, it's not like it was a big, you know, big commercial Disneyland coffee plantation kind of thing. And he kind of gave us his little tour, and he told us about, you know, the one kind of coffee that was made. And I got to look this up here. The animal that would the
Ludwig
Uwak. Hmm. So they basically there's one coffee that was they would feed food to this Uwak, and the food would ferment in the intestines of the Uwak. And the poo would be made into coffee,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty crazy. But in any case, this guy, he comes out with like this whole taster tray of coffees and teas.
That's like 15 things.
Yeah.
It's one of everything on the menu.
Yeah. And it was like multicolored. I mean, it's like all these different kinds of coffees. I mean, I remember, Alana, who takes care of my cats when I'm gone, she and her husband are big coffee drinkers. And I brought back a pouch from the gift shop there of avocado coffee.
You got the avocado.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they had all sorts of really funky coffees and teas. And so me being a tea drinker, you being a coffee drinker worked out really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I brought a ginseng coffee home.
Yeah.
That my girlfriend really enjoyed. She likes the sachet style coffee, so she pretty much had all that.
Yeah.
It was really cool, though. I mean, there was a turmeric
mm-hmm.
Coffee? There was, again, like the special coffee that I stayed away from. I was kind of researching it when I was there.
Yeah.
I was like, should I? I was very wary on this trip of, should I be doing this? Should I be eating this? Is the ice okay? Like, should I be drinking the water? Mm-hmm. You know? And I looked it up, and it was like, you know, probably shouldn't be drinking that coffee at the plantation or whatever it said.
Yeah.
And it was like too fresh almost. And I was like, you know.
Too fresh.
That's a good call.
Fresh poo is a lot more dangerous than old poo.
Yeah, I'm not going to drink it. So I never tried that kind of coffee. I heard it's like a delicacy, though. I heard it's awesome. But the tea thing was, it was really cool. And there were so many there. I mean, there was like a vanilla, a coconut.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what I brought back. It was actually like powdered, but it was pink.
For yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I got it over in the kitchen there. I can't remember what it was.
I have a picture of it. I'm curious. I want to see what the flavors were exactly. Yeah, so I have the menu here. Yeah, so we have turmeric tea, lemongrass, rosella, ginger, red ginger, Bali cocoa spices, and these are all, I think these are coffees now. That's all tea. So cocoa spices tea.
And the one I brought was the Rosella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Indonesian healthy drink by Hygienically. This menu is in English, but it's bad English.
Right.
Processed, mixed with natural sugar and pure Rosella flower to obtain a rich taste of tea, which is useful for cancer prevention, blood circulation, and refreshing your body. Preservative-free and no side effect for your body is exactly what the menu says.
Right. That's an instant sale for me there.
Yep. And then we had, vanilla coffee, avocado coffee, ginseng coffee, coconut coffee, and then just regular coffee, Bali coffee. So the teas actually were a little bit more interesting. The ginger, I feel like, was actually pretty good too, and the turmeric as well.
Yeah.
But it was just this huge tray of a lot of each one too.
Right.
Like if I would have drank all of that, I would have been buzzed caffeine wise.
Right.
You know? So, a cup of that special coffee was 50,000 rupees, by the way, which makes me think that your flag must have been like 500,000 rupees.
Well, 500,000 would have been $40.
Because a cup of that coffee was 50,000 rupees.
Yeah. Oh, no. That's $20, 500. Yeah. Because it was 2 million rupees for $80. Yeah.
So I think yours was like half a mil for your flag.
Right. So,
just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Serious inflation there. All right. So, but yeah, that was actually just a really fun stop there.
No, it was. Everything was pretty cool. And we had to buy some coffee from them after the sampler.
Oh, yeah. Which,
and the tour and everything like that. And then we, you know, kind of got back on the scooters, kind of getting late day at this point. I mean, we had the scooters pretty much all day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then we went up to Ubud Palace from there.
Which is where we kind of got the flag from.
Right.
The stories kind of connect now.
Yeah, Ubud Palace is, you know, Hindu temple there. And, you know, it's cool. It's not nearly as ornate as some of the Buddhist temples we saw. But, you know, it was a pretty cool thing there. And Ubud is a big commercial area there. And one of the things, though, I really wanted to do there was I needed to find the post office.
Right.
You know, I didn't mention when we were in Thailand, right across from the Grand Palace, I bought some stamps at the post office there. And that was an interesting experience in Thailand, in that all the stamps were just basically in little tiny Ziplocs attached to like a pegboard. And they literally just directed me over there and just said, take whatever you want out of there and then pay for it. I thought it was just very, very unique situation there. So
the
literally,
AC in that post office
was divine.
Was kicking too.
Yes, yes, that was divine there. But yeah, so I go in there and just literally took a stamp out of each one of these little pouches on the pegboard there. I probably ended up buying about, I don't know, 15 or 20 stamps there. But the Indonesian post office we found in Bali literally had 3 stamps for sale. 3 different stamps. So it was a very quick trip. Always interesting trying to explain to people who don't speak the language. I'm trying to buy one of each of your stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up with 3 Indonesian stamps there. But success.
500,000 rupees is $31, by the way.
Okay.
So for everybody listening, it was something like that, you know?
Right.
So yeah, that was... So that means, yeah, a cup of that coffee was only $3, which actually I feel like is kind of expensive for Bali prices for a cup of the special coffee.
Probably.
So
I think the exchange rate was a little different, though.
I do, too.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound...
Because exactly, like I say, correct. I remember getting 2 million rupees for $80.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
So, yeah, the dollar exchange rate has changed there. The other thing I was thinking of there is we did have a dinner that night that I know you were not happy with at all.
You know, the dinner itself was okay.
Yeah, but we were at an Indian restaurant there.
Right. And yeah, the food in Bali was interesting too, because I didn't know what Indonesian or, you know, Bali and food was necessarily. Yeah,
Balinese.
Balinese, yeah. So I wasn't sure kind of what they ate. We got like a really good like sandwich. I think I got a burger actually like that first day.
Oh yeah, that was a good restaurant there.
Really good.
Place, yeah.
So, I mean, the food we had had in Bali was pretty good so far. It was just kind of like a little blend of everything. We hit an Indian place. I love Indian food. Hadn't had any Indian food on the trip. Right. And we've kind of felt like we missed out on it in Thailand.
Yeah.
With the Indian, you know, strip mall being right next to us.
Right.
And we went to this Indian place, and honestly, the food was fine. But we were the only 2 people at the whole restaurant.
Right. That's a pretty decent-sized restaurant.
Should have been a red flag.
Yeah.
And honestly, I mean, really, there's no problem, I guess. And maybe I'm going to sound pretentious at the end of this episode, but it was like $5, $5 to add rice to any entree. And that was just a bummer for me because I wanted to eat. I was so hungry that night. And Indian food, I mean, at least here, and I guess this is the only place I've ever had Indian food, always comes with like you get like a main dish and they just bring you tons of rice and you can eat your main dish and it's just like delicious. And I had to really use my rice rationally at this Indian place. And it wasn't good enough to have to buy $5 worth of rice every time I needed rice. And the rice they brought me when I did get rice was so small.
Yeah.
Like a third of a cup of rice, I think.
Yeah, and what's so ironic is that one of the main attractions for tourists in Bali are the terraced rice fields.
Hmm.
You know, we didn't get to see any of that. I mean, there was a hike we could have taken not far from our hotel, but that's what they're really famous for, is these rice fields that they have there. And yet they're charging incredible amounts for a paltry amount of rice. I thought that was hilarious.
It was crazy. And we were the only 2 people at the entire restaurant. It was...
Right.
Interesting, for sure. And that was really our last night in Bali. We really only had like the 2 days there.
Yeah.
like the first day we got there and then this day we're describing to you.
Yeah, you know, Bali is a place I could see going back to because we probably needed a couple more days there to really see much. I mean, you know, they got volcanoes, they got the rice fields, you got the beaches. I mean, we didn't do any of that stuff.
I know.
So
we pretty much just stayed in Ubud in our little village that we were in, which was cool. But yeah, I think... I mean, my opinion on Bali in general is it's an obviously beautiful place.
Right.
But I think you can only go to Bali if you're in Asia already. I don't think, and you might differ.
Yeah, no, I opinion, wouldn't certainly just go there to go to Bali only.
But I for sure would not go to Bali from Colorado for a trip, for a honeymoon, for an anything. You know, it takes too much time, energy, money. You know, time change, crossing the date line to get there. And it felt very Hawaii to me, but not even the cool, you know, rocky parts of Hawaii. It just felt very island, which is cool. You know, I mean, we've been on islands before in the Azores and things. It didn't feel special enough. And I think part of the reason it didn't feel special enough that I want to travel there just on a trip to go there only is because we didn't see a lot of that stuff you're mentioning.
Right.
A lot of the beaches and stuff like that. So I definitely think it'd be worth going back to if we're ever in Asia again and popping back down to Bali and popping back up wherever we're going. But on a one-off trip, I think you'd have to be doing something pretty spectacular for it to be a one-off trip, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we didn't see those things, but they're not that far away distance-wise. It's not a huge island, but the problem is it takes so long to get there, as we found out going to the waterfall.
It does.
So yeah, it would definitely be worthwhile, probably, like, you know, you go to Ubud for a couple days, and maybe you go to another part of the island for a couple days, you know, probably having different bases to work from.
It would.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think it's definitely worth a stop if you're in Asia, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because the other thing, too, is... You know, we were in Japan, Korea, Taiwan, where obviously their language is very different, their alphabets and everything. In Indonesia, they actually use like English-type letters, but you can't figure out those words for anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, those words are just so bizarre, even though they are in our regular language. And Indonesia was once a Dutch colony. You know, they didn't get independence from Holland until 1949, after they'd been occupied by Japan. So you'd see some words there that were kind of Dutch and even a couple Dutch touches, but most of that is pretty much gone anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The one other thing I was going to mention, I was just thinking of, you know, the whole Hindu culture there and everything. Remember seeing swastikas everywhere?
Yes.
Wasn't that funny?
The reverse swastika is the Hindu logo. Right?
Well, no, that's the Buddhist logo. Remember in Japan, we'd see the reverse swastikas, but in Hinduism, they were regular swastikas. It's so funny.
That was kind of alarming, too. They were everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's how they mark things, I guess, you know, certain, you know, religious sites or whatever. So, but yeah, there was a lot to see in Bali that we could definitely go back to.
Yeah, and that's the con of doing a trip the way like this.
Right.
Like, I mean, we've been talking about Bali for 40 minutes or whatever it's been. So we obviously did a lot, saw a lot, you know, experienced a lot of what we could in Bali. But there's so much you miss out on when you want to go to a place for 48 hours.
Right.
So there's so many pros and cons to traveling like that. And I hope that if anybody's listening to this right now, you can understand those and form your own opinions on what kind of traveler you want to be.
Right.
But I think spending the time somewhere and then moving on somewhere else is a really cool, unique way to do it, even if you don't get to see everything. Because it just gives you motivation to go back and do these kind of... We could do the same trip again and do completely different things.
Absolutely.
On the same time schedule.
And yeah. That'd be
just as awesome.
We got a good taste of everything out there for sure. I thought of one more story from Bali and then we'll go and wrap this up. And remember when I blew my sandals out?
So
I have these UFO sandals. I mean, they're great, but they're kind of slick when you get them wet. And at our resort, coming back from the pool, it's like this really steep slope, And all of a sudden, like, my feet started sliding inside these UFO sandals. And I really couldn't stop myself going down the hill. I had to, like, I don't remember if I grabbed onto you or grabbed onto a wall or whatever and totally blew out the sandals. I mean, they just went straight into the trash after that.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. And no, I think you, I think you might have grabbed onto me.
Yeah.
But you almost tore me down.
Right.
Because I mean, I didn't have anything else on that was more stable than what you had on.
No, I was totally out of control going down, and the sandals actually ended up wrapped around my ankles, you know? so bad.
You're so pissed about it, too.
I was, man. I liked those sandals.
They were nice.
Yeah, they just, geez, oh well.
They made your bag a little bit nicer.
Well, yeah, I didn't have to pack those sandals anymore. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Oh well.
And Bali was awesome. Definitely, if you're in Asia, pop down, you know?
Yeah.
Or if you're in Australia. I mean, the thing about Bali was there was a lot of Australians there because Australians can get to Bali so easy. Like, I didn't really realize how close Bali was to Australia. We thought about going to Australia from Bali for a few days or whatever.
But yeah, we were going to pop, because Perth was not that far away.
It's like 3 hours.
Yeah.
So we definitely thought about it. So if you're ever in that area of the world, I think it's, you know, obviously worth a stay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Bali was as far south as we went on this trip. That was, down below, or it was Singapore. I can't remember.
No, I think Bali's further south.
Yeah. So, we were pretty far south, like I say, almost to Australia there. So, all right. Well, hey, let's, we did not get through everything here in part three. So we're going to have a part four. We'll get into Singapore and wrap up this trip finally. But thanks again for sharing all these great memories. And hopefully we were able to give some travelers some great ideas about what they can do in these two countries that we had a blast in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'll be back for a part four, hopefully pretty soon. So
sounds good. Thank you to Jack for this fun chat, and thanks to all of you, as always, for listening to the We Are Superman podcast. We hope you enjoyed this departure from the usual We Are Superman podcast subjects to get you inspired to explore the world yourself. Make sure you subscribe so you can load all new episodes of the We Are Superman podcast onto your phone. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please, the best thing you can do is share it with your friends or on social media. And please do me a favor and take 60 seconds and give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform on which you listen to us. I would also be humbly honored if you would write a review as well. These 5-star ratings and these reviews really do help us make more episodes and rise higher in the podcast services search algorithms, helping more people find our show. Until next time. Always be positive.